Today is Monday, January 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Days before Congress certifies the final votes in the 2020 U.S. election, more Republican lawmakers say they're going to challenge the results.
The 11 senators led by Ted Cruz of Texas say they will vote against certain state electors unless Congress appoints an electoral commission.
Plus, Brexit is done. As the first weekend of the year passes, how smooth of a transition was it? And how the coronavirus pandemic inspired musical artists? We'll have these stories and more next. 11 Republican senators say they will challenge the outcome of the presidential election when Congress meets Wednesday to certify the Electoral College results that confirm President-elect Joe Biden won. AP correspondent Ben Thomas starts us off.
The 11 senators led by Ted Cruz of Texas say they will vote against certain state electors unless Congress appoints an electoral commission to immediately conduct an audit of the election results. While acknowledging they are unlikely to change the results, the group says they will reject electors from what they describe as disputed states, as not regularly given and lawfully certified. Election officials from both parties and President Trump's now former Attorney General William Barr have said there was no evidence of widespread fraud. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has urged Republicans against efforts to overturn the election. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, a strong supporter of U.S. President Donald Trump, said he looked, quote, forward to hearing from and will listen closely to the objections of his colleagues in challenging the results of the election. Graham added that those objecting will need to provide proof of the charges they are making. They will also need to provide clear and convincing evidence that the failure to act in both the state and federal courts and the state legislatures, which investigated the claims, was made in error. They will also need to show that the failure to take corrective action in addressing election fraud changed the outcome of the state's votes and ultimately the outcome of the election. End quote. Of the roughly 50 lawsuits that the president and his allies have filed challenging election results, nearly all have been dismissed or dropped. He has also lost twice in the U.S. Supreme Court. U.S. President Donald Trump is reported to have pressured Georgia's top election official to find enough votes to overturn his defeat in the southern state, according to a recording of the hour-long call first reported by The Washington Post. The Associated Press has some of the recording of that conversation.
The ballots are corrupt, and you're going to find that they are, which is totally illegal. It's more illegal for you than it is for them, because you know what they did, and you're not reporting it. That's a criminal offense. And you know, you can't let that happen. That's a big risk.
The Saturday call was the latest move in Trump's two-month effort, insisting that his loss to the Democratic president-elect Joe Biden in the November 3rd election was the result of widespread voter fraud, a claim that has been widely rejected by state and federal election officials. The White House has declined to comment. Now, as I mentioned, the certification of the Electoral College votes takes place on Wednesday, and VOA's Steve Reddish explains the process.
Joe Biden knows what happens next in his journey to be inaugurated as President of the United States. He's done it twice, first in January 2013.
To verify the certificates and count the votes of the electors of the several states for President and Vice President of the United States.
And again, 4 years later, January 6th, 2017, carrying out the vice president's constitutionally mandated duty of presiding over a joint session of Congress to open and count the sealed electoral votes from the 50 states.
Donald Trump of New York has received, for president of the United States, 304 votes.
The 12th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution outlines the duties for the sitting vice president, who, as the president of the Senate, shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the votes shall then be counted. How and when that happens can be found in the U.S. Code of Laws, Chapter 3, Subsection 15, Counting Electoral Votes in Congress. It is legislation that dates back to 1887, amended and codified in 1948. It designates January 6th at 1 o'clock in the afternoon for the President of the Senate to preside over a joint session of Congress, open the sealed certificates containing electoral votes from the 50 states, and have them counted in alphabetical order. Subsection 15 also provides the opportunity for members to object to each state's vote count, provided it is presented in writing and signed by at least one senator and one member of the House of Representatives.
Is the objection in writing and signed not only by the member of the House of Representatives, but also by a senator?
Mr. President, the objection is in writing, signed by a member of the House of Representatives, but not yet by a member of the United States
Senate. In that case, the objection cannot be entertained.
In 2005, the electoral vote count was suspended for just the second time ever when an objection met the required threshold.
Has the senator signed the objection?
The senator has signed the objection.
An objection presented in writing and signed by both a representative and a senator complies with the law, Chapter 1 of Title 3, United States Code.
Both houses of Congress retreated to their individual chambers for no more than 2 hours of debate, followed by a simple majority vote on the objection, which failed to be sustained.
They cheated and they rigged our presidential election, but we will
Amid President Donald Trump's unsubstantiated claims of vote fraud, it will be his vice president, Mike Pence, presiding over the electoral vote count that declares Joe Biden the winner of the 2020 presidential election. At least one member of the House and one senator say they plan to raise an objection during Wednesday's vote count. With a Democratic majority in the House, any objection will most likely be defeated. Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
Before Congress votes on the electors, there's still one more election set to take place on Tuesday. Two crucial Senate runoff elections will be held in the southern state of Georgia, with inflammatory accusations still circulating about the state's handling of last month's presidential election. As Mike O'Sullivan reports, the rhetoric about election fraud has reached dangerous levels, casting a cloud over the January 5th runoffs.
Protesters, supported by Donald Trump, continue to say he was the real winner of the November presidential election. It's a claim he has made repeatedly himself.
With the turn of a dial or the change of a chip, you can press a button for Trump and the vote goes to Biden. What kind of a system is this?
But these and other baseless claims of fraud have been dismissed by election officials from both parties and nearly all observers who see no evidence the vote was rigged. William Barr, who resigned as Attorney General December 23rd, also found no evidence of pervasive fraud. Political scientist Raphael Sonnenschein goes further.
This is probably one of the best run elections the United States has ever done. I mean, basically the turnout was so gigantic, and it was done very smoothly, and there's almost no documented cases of any serious problems in the race.
Yet the ongoing allegations are affecting next Tuesday's runoff elections in Georgia for two Senate seats. The results of that vote will determine which party controls the Senate. The claims of irregularities in mail-in ballots and accusations against computerized machines from Dominion voting systems have raised doubts among some. Doubts fanned by President Trump.
Unfortunately, in Georgia, they're using the same horrible Dominion system.
Dominion Systems says its employees have received death threats based on fabricated charges. Trump supporters and Republican officials have filed more than 50 lawsuits, trying but failing to reverse the results in swing states that Biden won. An effort to take their case to the Supreme Court was condemned by Biden.
This legal maneuver was an effort by elected officials and one group of states to try to get the Supreme Court to wipe out the votes of more than 20 million Americans in other states.
A November recount in Georgia confirmed that Biden indeed won there. Georgia's top election official, a Republican, said the issue was settled in his state.
I live by the motto that numbers don't lie.
His statement led to threats against state employees. Another Georgia election official issued a plea in early December.
Mr. President, you have not condemned these actions or this language. Senators, you have not condemned this language or these actions. This has to stop.
Some Senate Republicans acknowledge Biden's win, but Trump's claims of fraud have clouded the Georgia runoff. As the parties fight in a tight election with high stakes for both sides. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
When the new year rang in, so did a new era in Europe, one without Britain being part of the European Union. The process for the United Kingdom to leave the EU took years to complete, and negotiations to resolve a litany of trade issues went down to the wire before both sides came to an agreement. So, with the first weekend complete, how are things going between the UK and the 27-member EU bloc? Catherine Field gave me this update from Paris via WhatsApp.
It was smooth, but part of that was because of two very important factors. One was COVID. The French have very much put in place strict rules that any trucks that are coming over to France from the United Kingdom, the drivers have to have a negative COVID test. So that slowed things down a bit. Also, it was the weekend, so there weren't that many trucks on the road as there would be. Plus, because there was this big concern that there would be just chaos at the border, a lot of companies got their stock in advance, which is why we saw such heavy traffic across the channel between the UK and France in the last month or so. So, you know, it's in some ways it's given everyone on the ground a chance to get these new systems in place, see how it's working. And for the time being, it seems to be working, but these are early days, so they were quite pleased. It was a quiet start, a quiet weekend.
Speaking of cross-border and trade and travel, what about the Irish border? Because that was a focus of a lot of discussions because that becomes a hard border between Britain and the European Union.
Oh, indeed. We've already seen over the weekend several trucks were turned back from UK ports. They were hoping to get these trucks with the goods on the ferries over to the Republic of Ireland. They were turned back because they didn't have the right documentation. Even though the United Kingdom has given a bit of leeway to companies with when it comes to some of the paperwork, they've said they'll be a little bit lenient over the next 12 months. The European Union isn't that lenient, and they say they want all the supporting paperwork in place. So they're saying you wanted zero tariff access to the EU. That was on condition that you had the paperwork. So that was why we saw that traffic between the west coast of the United Kingdom and Ireland. And some trucks being turned back.
So what's next? Because the British Parliament has already passed the Brexit agreement, but the European Union Parliament has not. So what do we need to keep an eye out for?
The next date to look for will be probably sometime in February when the European Parliament votes on it. Then it actually does get over that last hurdle. There's no guarantee that they will agree it, that they won't have all the numbers. But certainly, there's been a lot of backwards and forwards, a lot of the normal backward and forwards you get from the Commission, the Executive Branch and the European Parliament has been there. So we're looking at that date. After that, it does actually become law. And then, and I hate to break this to you, then we start again to start negotiating an agreement between the EU and the United Kingdom for financial services. So we're going to go all the way back to the start again.
Catherine Field reports from Paris, France. And still to come.
For some, 2020 was a terrible year. And others think, well, it wasn't that bad. For musicians around the world, especially Northern Ghana, it wasn't a good year for them at all because of coronavirus. They saw the pandemic as a threat to their livelihood. And like every human instinct, they used the only resource they had to join the fight against COVID-19. And that is music.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
From ostriches and emus to kiwis and penguins, scientists say that there are currently about 60 living flightless bird species in the world. There are many more species like the giant moa that became extinct over the years. A new study published in the journal Science Advances suggests that the number of flightless bird species would be quadrupled today if it weren't for human interference. The study, led by researchers from the University College of London, also proposes that flightlessness evolved more frequently in birds than was thought if extinct species along with current species were considered. To make their findings, the researchers put together a list of 581 bird species that have gone extinct from when our earliest human ancestors walked the Earth until today. Of the 581 extinct birds, 166 of them weren't able to fly. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The COVID-19 death toll in the United States has surpassed 350,000. This data compiled from Johns Hopkins University near Washington shows the country passing the milestone early Sunday. Experts are anticipating another surge in cases and deaths stemming from holiday gatherings. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Multiple states have reported a record number of cases over the past few days, including North Carolina and Arizona. In hard-hit California, funeral homes are turning families away because they have no more room for bodies. And Florida is reporting its first case of the new, more contagious strain of the coronavirus. The U.S. has recorded more than 20 million infections since the start of the pandemic, 1 million of them in New York. Meanwhile, the vaccine rollout continues to face challenges. The CDC says over 4 million people received a first dose of COVID vaccine, with 13 million doses distributed. But that's far short of Operation Warp Speed's goal of allocating 20 million doses by the end of last year. I'm Julie Walker.
Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson warned on Sunday of new lockdowns to be issued across the country as cases of the coronavirus rise, particularly with a new variant spreading. Britain has been seeing upwards of 50,000 new cases each day, and health experts note that the new variant is up to 70% more contagious. The Philippines also said it would prohibit the entry of foreign travelers from the United States until at least January 15th, after the new coronavirus variant was detected in the United States. In Bangkok, Thai officials shuttered the city's nightlife with a ban on bar, nightclub, and restaurant alcohol sales, among a raft of restrictions aimed at curbing the kingdom's rising toll. Elsewhere, Tokyo's governor on Saturday asked Japan's government to declare a new state of emergency as the country battles a third wave of infections with record numbers of new cases. In France, which recently lengthened an overnight curfew by 2 hours in parts of the country, has the highest case count in Western Europe, with more than 2.7 million, according to the Johns Hopkins University tracker. Also, India gave final approval for emergency use of two coronavirus vaccines. One of the vaccines was developed by AstraZeneca and Oxford University. Bharat Biotech, an Indian company, developed the other. VOA has extended and expanded coverage of the pandemic on our website. Media reports say that U.S. President Donald Trump recently received unconfirmed intelligence information indicating that China offered money to non-state actors in Afghanistan to attack American soldiers. Ayaz Ghul spoke to me from Islamabad via WhatsApp with the details.
Well, what we understand from the intelligence that has been shared with President Donald Trump is that Chinese have offered bounties on U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan, and that was quite a revelation because it has come out at a time when tensions have heightened between China and the United States. And now with this revelation, or alleged revelation, obviously things will become more problematic for the two big powers. We know that we have been told that so far this intelligence has not been confirmed, and U.S. officials are still working to corroborate whatever intelligence they have gathered so far.
As you mentioned, the intelligence has not been confirmed, and they're still working to sort things out. But overall, what's been the reaction, not only from the U.S., but from Afghan officials?
Well, this is interesting because we tried our best to reach out to officials in Kabul to get some reaction, but they have been really dead silent. They have not said anything. They have basically said that they are waiting for U.S. officials to come out on the record and share some details. Only then they would be able to comment on this. So we have not received or seen any reaction from officials in Afghanistan.
Ayaz, this sounds very familiar to allegations that the U.S. intelligence community made against Russia, saying that they were paying bounties on U.S. troops.
It's more or less the same thing, you know, what U.S. officials have said about Russia paying bounties to militants in Afghanistan, and now China is doing the same thing. The difference between the two is that at that time, about the allegations against Russia, we knew for sure from U.S. officials that the militants that were allegedly being paid bounties on U.S. soldiers were part of the Taliban insurgency, the same insurgency that the United States was discussing with a peace agreement at that time. That's when this scandal emerged, that Taliban and U.S. officials were negotiating, which obviously ended on a very sort of a landmark agreement between the two adversaries. But here, in case of the Chinese bounties that were allegedly being paid to non-state actors, you know, that's what U.S. officials reportedly have referred to non-state actors. They have not clearly said whether these non-state actors are linked to the Taliban or they are part of other groups operating in Afghanistan. But we know that Chinese are worried. They have repeatedly conveyed to Afghan officials that East Turkestan Islamic Movement, which China has declared as a terrorist group and has been carrying out attacks in China's western Xinjiang region, and allegedly, according to Chinese officials, these militants have bases in Afghanistan. So we know for sure that these are the militants that China wants to root out, but which non-state actors the U.S. intelligence has found to be in contact with Chinese, we still have no idea.
Ayaz Ghul reports from Islamabad, Pakistan. As we kick off the first Music Monday in 2021, Sumit Gaita takes this look at the top five coronavirus-inspired songs from northern Ghana.
For some, 2020 was a terrible year. And others think, well, it wasn't that bad. For musicians around the world, especially northern Ghana, it wasn't a good year for them at all because of coronavirus. They saw the pandemic as a threat to their livelihood. And like every human instinct, they used the only resource they had to join the fight against COVID-19, and that is music. I present to you in this New Year special report, 2020 Top 5 COVID-19 Awareness Songs from Northern Ghana. Let's start with song number 5, and it's a song from AJ Sugar, titled Stop Coronavirus. In this one, she sings in her local language, Gruni, advising her people to stay safe and stop the spread of the virus. Number 4 is a song from Stone B. Title of the song is Coronavirus. He's a sound engineer and a musician at the same time. And in this song, he sings in 3 different languages: Pidgin, Twi, and Dagbani. Number 3 is from Ataka and Gonga. Title of the song is COVID-19. A rapper and a singer join forces to fight the pandemic with their music. Well, Tamale did not witness so much of concerts in 2020 because of COVID-19. However, only 2 concerts were organized in November. The first one was Don Sigley's Sparkly album launch and Fancy Gadam's Peace concert to promote peace towards Ghana's election. Both concerts experienced great patronage. And still on 2020 Top 5 COVID-19 Awareness Song from Northern Ghana, song number 2 is by Fancy Gadam. Title of the song is Corona.
Fizz a sound.
And finally, number one is by Abu Sadiq, also titled Coronavirus. That's how the year 2020 went down as far as music is concerned in Northern Ghana. Thank you and wish you a happy new year.
Sumit Gaita's report was featured on VOA's Music Time in Africa. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to stay up to date with world news and events 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, your desktop computer, or any other device to voanews.com. And don't forget about our top-of-the-hour newscasts. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a magnificent Monday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The mismanagement and corruption of the illegitimate regime of Nicolas Maduro has plunged Venezuela into the worst humanitarian, political, and economic crisis in its history. The United States has provided hundreds of millions of dollars to support relief efforts for Venezuelans, both inside and outside of their homeland. However, providing humanitarian aid is a short-term remedy. We need new ideas for long-term solutions. That is why the U.S. Agency for International Development and the Inter-American Development Bank launched the Better Together, or Juntos es Mejor Challenge. The Better Together Challenge is another application of open innovation where anyone at any time on any subject from anywhere in the world can submit ideas to try to help the Venezuelan people, both outside of Venezuela but also inside Venezuela, said former executive director of USAID's Global Development Lab, Harry Bader. The lab is transforming into the Innovation, Technology, and Research Hub as part of the Bureau for Democracy, Development, and Innovation.
People who have experienced the trauma and the difficulty and the deprivation of living in Venezuela and then escaping the regime and trying to find a way to temporarily build a life outside, they can use their personal experiences and develop ideas that no development agency would have knowledge of or the ability to contemplate. Because it's not us that are doing it. It's the lived experiences of the Venezuelans that can be turned into the ideas that they themselves create.
The exciting thing about these awards is that they can be large or small, said Mr. Bader.
We're doing projects like clean water access. We're creating these digital forums for helping people find relatives. We're creating forums for helping people find jobs consistent with the rules and regulations of the countries that they now find themselves in, where they have migrated to find security and to help their families.
As part of the Better Together initiative, USAID works with Venezuelans both inside and outside Venezuela and with Brazilian, Peruvian, Colombian, and American groups across the region. In late October, USAID Acting Deputy Administrator John Barsa announced the latest recipients of USAID grants. I'm pleased to announce today that USAID is funding three new projects in Venezuela, Chile, and Colombia with $1 million under the Better Together Challenge, he said. These new awards, which will improve the lives of thousands, bring us to 19 total projects supported by USAID and the IDB, with more awards coming.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.